to the 24/7 Sports College Football Podcast with your hosts, Chip Patterson and Barton Simmons. The ultimate insider's guide from signing day to the national championship game and everything in between. CBS Sports presents the 24/7 Sports College Football Podcast.
It's the 24/7 Sports College Football Podcast. We are here again, coming to you from the CBS Sports HQ. Barton Simmons, Chip Patterson. We've got, this is the attrition edition, which means that it's appropriate that we're out here in rugged conditions, having to figure out a way to get by in all kinds of ways. I mean, this is something that any good college football program's got to know how to do.
Chip, this is a fitting time to talk about health issues. Mine is rapidly deteriorating. I'm going to have to excuse myself to cough every once in a while here. So, I we're at the end of camp. I'm beat up.
It's tired. Good. Dude, you ready to go back to your apartment? Like, you're tired of living in the dorms or wherever they've got you for, the camp time. You're ready to go back and get in your pillow.
I need my fresh towels, my home pillow, see my dog again, all that kind of stuff. No, we talked about how we're starting to get news come out of camp, and now we're at the point in the season where it's not always good news, and that's ultimately what it boils down to, and talking about who are playing for national titles, who are going to win conference titles, who are going to be better or worse than we think. I mean, a big chunk of that is who's going to stay healthy and who's not. I still think Tennessee wins the East last year if they just get a little more lucky on the health front. And so, you know, now we're starting to see some of those issues rear their heads and some that are going to be pretty critical.
So we're going to start off the attrition edition with suspensions. And then we will get to injuries, and then our award-winning question of the day closing segment will actually pair nicely with a fun slideshow that you can find on CBS Sports Digital, where we have gone through the annual best in state debate. And boy, I can tell you, if any listeners of this have been around for a while, I had to eat some crow because last year for the best in state, I was not a part of it this year, but last year I was, and I picked Marshall as the top team in West Virginia. So when Marshall,
you got to take your shots, take your shots.
When Marshall just did a backslide all the way to the bottom of the Cayusa, and West Virginia's out here winning 10 games, I think I was still having folks slide up in the Twitter mentions to remind me of what an idiot I was. So we're going to have some fun with the best in state debate for our question of the day. But beginning the attrition edition with some suspensions, specifically, we'll start at the University of Florida, where seven players, most notably Antonio Callaway, have been suspended for the first game. Now, Florida typically has a friendly first game. It's normally played in the swamp. It's normally against a G5 opponent. That's who you'll often find even in FCS or some sort of in-state, payday game. But this one is a little bit bigger. They'll be playing Michigan in the kickoff game in Dallas. It's in Jerry World. Antonio Callaway is not going to be there. Kevonis Davis, Richard DeSeer Jones, James Houston, Ventrell Miller, Jordan Smith, Kadeem Telfort, reportedly suspended, and we kind of referenced this, but we didn't get a chance to get into it, reportedly suspended for purchasing items at the campus bookstore with their student ID cards. They didn't have sufficient funds for the transactions, and then later sold those items for cash. It's a scheme as old as the creation of a student ID card that you can put money on. And it is something that is not right, obviously. I'm not out here promoting this, but
it's also a scheme that is a little bit hard to get away with.
Right, that's what I'm saying. Like it, because it's so old, we've reached a point where you're going to get caught. Not too bright. All right, so number one, let's start with on-field, what does this mean for Florida like losing a player like Antonio Callaway in Las Vegas. We've already seen the betting markets respond to it a little bit with the moving the line in favor of Michigan. We were just talking about it at lunch. It's like up to 3.5 or 4 from like 2.5. And folks, we will be running down some game lines once
we're
we get
be
into
on top
the season.
Of these spreads.
So I ask you, the loss of Antonio Callaway for Florida, does it feel like something that could end up being the difference for the Gators?
Well, I mean, the difference, first of all, I think I said on our last show, like, I'm a little bit disappointed that this is happening because now I'm not going to look like as much of an expert if I pick Michigan to win. I thought Michigan was going to win before the suspensions. I still think Michigan's going to win. In fact, I'm a little more nervous about picking Michigan now because there's just that X factor of circling the wagons and being the sort of the underdog now arrives with the Florida situation. So I'm interested in that, but I think it hurts. Our editor, Adam Silverstein, is a Florida guy.
Yeah.
Shout out Adam Silverstein. And at lunch today, he was talking about how he doesn't think it's going to have an impact. And I get, and it seems like there's some Florida, the Florida sort of inner circle thinks that this is no big deal and they have all these
guys.
This
feels like a tremendous deal.
I think it is. I agree with you. I mean, this is from a talent and a just purely like ability perspective, this is one of the best receivers in college football.
Tyree Cleveland is a good wide receiver, but he does not have Antonio Callaway like talent.
No. Yes, they have issues at the quarterback position. Yes, they've had issues with offensive explosiveness in the past. Antonio Callaway is that guy that would give them those big plays that you need so that you're not driving the field for 80 yards on 15 plays. Like, he's the guy that would bail them out and get a big pass play, return a punt. These are things that he provided that offense desperately needs. So I think it's a big deal. I think they were going to lose anyways. But now I continue to think that they're going to lose.
Reported scheme, this is the beginning of what we expect to be a lot of week one suspensions, because week one suspensions is always where you're going to get out the anything that went wrong basically from the bowl game to now. That's when you're going to get it. And coaches, of course, love to keep it under wraps until the very end. Like, this is why the, like, no news is good news type thing.
Yeah.
I believe this is far from the last that we're going to see in terms of some suspensions. This is one that is certainly major impact on one of the biggest games of the weekend.
Also, how many more suspensions
can Antonio Callaway have?
Like, has he sort of hit for the cycle yet on, like, suspensions and reasons for suspensions and off-field issues he's gotten into? Now, I know he was he was sort of proven to be innocent of the whatever the was it a sexual assault or there was something happened off field with a female that he seems to have been cleared of, but he's had it seems like every time you look up there's a new issue that he's being suspended for, and I don't know, man. I mean I'm losing confidence in this kid to stay on the field. I mean, I just. Is this the last one? Like, are we done now, Antonio? Like, is this it?
I don't know. Is he going to be able to get drafted because of, like, is this going to prevent him?
He'll get drafted. I think it's going to hurt his. I mean, this hurts his stock because. But this is also a guy that they rave about in practice. They rave about as a practice player, as a competitor. So between the whistles, between the lines. He's a dude, but he is just there's just a lot you're getting with him, and so I don't know. He's certainly the big one here. They the other guys are depth guys, so now they're an injury or two away of playing some guys that don't need to be on the field, but But there's, you know, this is still a team that's about defense more than anything else.
Another suspension that stood out, one that the suspension was actually about 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago. Jordan Whitehead for Pittsburgh catching a suspension. It's
among others, but he's the big name.
Yeah, he's the big name. There's three total, I think, and then including Rory Blair was dismissed.
But that one stings because a three-game suspension early in the season sometimes you can get away with, but Pitt plays Penn State and Oklahoma State week two and three.
And Jordan Whitehead was the ACC Freshman of the Year in 2015. He's a dynamic safety. He's a talented dude. And his absence ties in with reports that Quadri Olison, a guy who was called one touch in high school because he only needed that one touch to take it to the house. Like, this is a Pittsburgh team that we saw beat Penn State and Clemson a year ago that I wanted to consider them like a coastal dark horse. You know, we're going to be making our ACC order of finish picks here in the next couple days. I was like, man, maybe I could slide Pitt up to two. And when I see the Jordan Whitehead suspension, I think he is a dynamic enough player where if I thought that Pitt was going to be able to tap into that magic again against Penn State, it was going to require probably the whole group.
I agree. I mean, and it's, I mean, that's a kid that's played some offense for them. And that's an area where, I mean, that's ultimately what Pat Narduzzi is all about, is having defensive backs, particularly the corner position, who can allow him to be aggressive in the blitz game and get after the quarterback. And he hadn't had that yet. They continue to get burned because they haven't built up the secondary yet to do the things he wants to do. So with Jordan Whitehead out, that's just one more hit in that attempt to develop that kind of a defense. So yeah, I think that matters. It's hard for me to see them starting anything better than 1-2.
So the suspensions to Antonio Callaway and six other Florida players matters. The suspension to Jordan Whitehead and three other Pitt players, particularly with the way that Pitt starts the season, that matters. Here we go. Does the transfer of John Franklin III from Auburn matter for Auburn? It matters for John Franklin III because
right.
it means that he can take the familiar path from Florida State to Last Chance U to Lane Kiffin. If he wants to wind up at Florida Atlantic,
wants to dive into that quarterback race.
Yeah. If he wants to really just fully complete the path of where he wants to go. But that news breaking on Tuesday, Auburn announcing a day after announcing that Jarrett Stidham would be the starter and Sean White, the big red tomato, would be the backup. John Franklin III, you watched him coming out of high school. Like, at any point were you looking at John Franklin III and feeling like he was going to be a Power 5 quarterback that could make a difference?
No, man.
Really?
No, this guy, I mean, he's always been a future receiver. And he's apparently the only person that hadn't been able to figure that out, that he's a receiver. And, I mean, he went to Florida State, and we had him as a three-star, but he was one of those guys where he was so fast and athletic that you kind of hold your breath and hope you got it right with having him a three-star, because you knew that if you could tap into that athleticism, whether it was at quarterback or receiver or somewhere else, that, man, that was things were going to get dangerous, and he could end up being an NFL guy. But I just think his resistance to moving positions has slowed him down in his development. I hope he goes somewhere and returns kicks and catches passes and makes some plays this year. But no, man, he's always been an athlete, and if anything for Auburn, this just removes like a distraction. Not that he was like a bad kid distraction, but just like the whole like, what's John?
Oh, is he going to be a Wildcat? We got the Wildcat package out here for John Franklin III.
What's the John Franklin role? Is about the least important storyline in the SEC right now.
All right,
we can stop. We can
move on. All right. Well, so from the suspension part of our attrition addition to something where there's a little bit a little bit less control, and that would be the injuries. So we've got a host of injuries here, or injury issues, or other attrition issues, and we're going to cycle through these. And I want to start in the SEC East. Cole Mosier, Kentucky left tackle. Jalen Dickerson, safety for South Carolina. Two SEC East teams. Which one of these feels more impactful to you?
So Cole, I'm not sure if who's got his name right or how this pronounced, but Cole Mosier is a returning starter on a really good offensive line who now is out for the season with an ACL injury. Jalen Dickerson, a true freshman, projected to start, out for the year with, I think, a shoulder or something. Like, you would think that the offensive lineman, this returning starter, would be the guy that is the bigger blow. But I actually think Jalen Dickerson is the one that
wow.
hurts more. Because I know who's behind Cole Mosier, and that's Landon Young, who's a true sophomore, 6'7", 300-plus pound.
Local kid, right?
Freak, yeah. He's an in-state kid, and he is – he was a five-star. I had him as a five-star. And he got a sniff last year, played a little bit. I think that they can get him ready to roll. I think he's a guy that's capable of stepping in and being a I don't know if he's a dominant guy right away, but he's a guy that's a starter-level player as a true sophomore after playing. Meanwhile, with Jalen Dickerson, Will Muschamp's talked about he's one of the best safeties he's ever seen at this stage or something like that in the spring. He's loving this kid up, and this is a defense that's not that deep to begin with. So that worries me a little bit about South Carolina just losing him on a depth situation.
You think that the South Carolina defense in general, because we've talked ourselves into South Carolina, we spent too much time getting hyped about it. We're like outside of Sky Moore, Where were we hyped about the South Carolina defense? Jalen Dickerson obviously was part of that, and now he's not. But yeah. Where are the bright spots on that South Carolina defense? Like, if Dickerson's gone, where are you still hanging your hat, particularly maybe in the back seven?
Right. I mean, I still think their linebackers are good with Sky Moore, who's back. That's an addition because he wasn't on this team last year. He was injured. Bryson Allen Williams, I think, is a good player. They've got experience up front, and they actually have experience in the back end with Chris Lamons and Jamarcus King, and I mean, they've got guys that have played a lot of snaps in the secondary. I just don't know that they're necessarily elite SEC guys back there. I still think they'll be fine, but I just think this is a defensive roster that cannot, and you and I both agree, I think, that South Carolina has got a chance to surprise people.
Yes,
right?
Yes.
Whereas if they get another couple injuries, this might not be the one that knocks them out, but now if they get another one, then they're in trouble.
All right.
Where do you fall? You haven't given your answer. Where do you fall on this?
I'm starting to fade. I'm starting to fade on Kentucky, and I just feel like this might be the beginning of just a tumble of bad breaks, you know? So if I still think that when we've got all the excitement about Kentucky having an offense that's being able to roll, you're bringing back good quarterback, good running back. I could see this falling apart, man. I don't know.
We'll see what they're about. I mean, can you lose? Again, this is where teams like, you used to say Alabama because they're just sort of your staple powerhouse. But this is where teams like Alabama don't miss a beat because they pull a five-star off the bench. Kentucky's pulling a five-star off the bench. They are pulling a five-star off the bench. Like, that is not
– Kentucky is the next Alabama. You heard it here first. Barton Simmons on the 24/7 Sports College Football podcast.
No, I'm just saying, like, that's – how often does Kentucky have a five-star sitting there, like, chomping at the bit? And not – like, the kid may be a bust, but he is – I don't think he will be. I think he's going to be an NFL guy. So I think that's why this is a team ready for this. And I think like, South Carolina would probably be – would be able to absorb this a lot easier a year from now when they've got more Muschamp's guys on board. But right now, still dealing with a lot of Steve Spurrier defensive players.
All right. Okay. This is two very good defensive teams, Wisconsin and Florida. We've got Jack Citchie, potential All-American linebacker. He's out for the season. Marcel Harris. I don't know if we could have said that Marcel Harris was All-American potential, but at least All-SEC potential. Is that fair?
Yes.
Out for the season. Which one feels more significant to you?
Well, I think Zach Sitchy is a better player than Marcel Harris. Even though Marcel Harris was first, I think maybe even led Florida in tackles last year, despite all those guys that went to the NFL draft. But I think the Marcel Harris injury hurts more because Wisconsin's probably got some other dude sitting back there that was a walk-on that is just, you know, ready to get in there and play his role and make a bunch of tackles and surprise some people. And it's just that, I mean, that's just in the culture. There's someone ready to roll. And not that there isn't at Florida. I mean, they got plenty of DBs. But Marcel Harris was the one return between Quincy Wilson and Jalen Tabor and Marcus May.
Mm-hmm.
Now, so three borderline first-round draft picks. Now you lose the fourth from that group.
It's just Nick Washington all alone, right, in terms of, like, players that we trust.
Chauncey Gardner. Yeah. And so I think that, they're going to have – oh, God. Chauncey Gardner is the other – there's – I just wrote a story on this. But there's they've got three starters back, or three guys back that are you feel confident are going to start. They got to find that fourth guy. But it's – again, I just think when you lose that much in the secondary, where a secondary has to be your strength, where you've got so many questions on offense, where your identity needs to be turning people over, I just think the Marcel Harris loss is – I think that really stings Florida and plays somebody, a fourth guy maybe, that just could use a little bit of time to sort of grow into the system, grow into the defense.
I think losing Jack Sitchy hurts because I agree with you. Remember, literally, Jack Sitchy was a former walk-on, but this dude was kind of the heartbeat of the team. This guy is the team captain, and you've got other dudes, interestingly enough, guys that are coming back from a knee injury. Redshirt sophomore Chris Orr hurt his knee in the season opener last year against LSU. He's going to be, I think right now, taking reps with the ones. You've still got T.J. Edwards. You've still got Ryan Connolly. Like, the linebacker group as a whole at Wisconsin is going to be good. But, man, like, I remember Sitchy with that mohawk, like, flying around the field. Him and Lil Watt were a pair last year. And you lose Lil Watt. you lose Jack Sitchy here, and he's going to be able to, you know, potentially get a sixth year of eligibility. He'll be able to petition since the medical hardship. If he wants to stay. But man, it's I'm going to say not for the reasons of the personnel or the depth chart or anything else, but this guy was the heartbeat of the defense. Now, yeah. all that said. Still totally confident in, like, Wisconsin as a team. You know, I feel like with both of these positions, Florida's defensive backs, Wisconsin's linebackers, we've just seen, like, 4 years of really stellar play at those position groups to the point where you know that the work and practice and that the competition has been so at a level that's so high that there's just not going to be a big drop-off for one player.
Well, and the other thing I think, Wisconsin's got a little – and, I mean, look, Northwestern's good, BYU's good, but they've got a little bit of an easier schedule to figure things out. But Florida's sitting there, got to go Michigan week one, their week three, they're versus Tennessee, you know, which is going to be a huge SEC battle. So, I mean, it's just they don't have any time to spare. They got to have – whoever's back there better be ready to play, whether it's Jaywan Taylor at safety or Chauncey Gardner at safety, whoever it is – you know, you better strap it on and show up. But we'll dip into a non-injury one, a kind of a little bit of a projection here for our third scenario. Devontae Phillips, who's what's either suspended for the season, kicked off the team, not sure which.
Suspended indefinitely suspended as of right now.
Definitely, okay. A wide receiver for Florida State. Or Chris Warren, who is still very much in play as the starting running back at Texas, but he's had concussion issues. He was injured almost all of last year. And we're just going to – let's just, for this hypothetical, say Chris Warren is going to have concussion issues throughout the year and will be out for Texas. In that hypothetical, who is the bigger loss? A Chris Warren running back for Texas or a Devontae Phillips wide receiver for Florida?
Chris Warren.
Florida State, rather.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Texas needs to be able to move that ball on the ground. And Deonta Foreman had a lot of carries and he had a lot of yards. And, you know, we're looking at Shane Buechele likely as our starting quarterback. Is that that's where our head's at right now?
Yeah, I think that's safe to say.
I think that they've losing Chris Warren, a player who's been around a good bit. I think that's a big loss. Devontae Phillips, talented as he might be, never really felt like he made a huge impact. And you know who I really, really love? It's Nyquan Murray.
Yeah.
I think Nyquan Murray is going to be a stud this year. And when you think about the way the Florida State offense sets up, you need to have the different players to play like each of the roles for sure. But if you've got Nyquan Murray to stretch the field and be your like game breaker on the outside, then I don't know, man. The loss of Devontae Phillips didn't really like jump out at me. Am I off on that? Am I underplaying Devontae Phillips' potential for the Seminoles this season? Because with Warren, I'm looking at the Texas backfield and I'm a little bit concerned.
Yeah, I agree. I think this is probably an easy one. And if the way I look at it too is if you're a Florida school, whether you're Florida State, Florida, or Miami, and you don't have some receivers on the bench that are ready to play, man, you're doing something wrong. They've got DJ Matthews, who is he is phenomenal. He's going to be really exciting to watch. Who's more of? He's like 165 pounds, but the dude can go. And then they've got a guy named Keith Gavin, who's a true freshman, who's a bigger, like 6'3", 200-plus pound guy, who's like a 6'8 high jumper. They've got Auden Tate. They've got Nyquan Murray, like you mentioned. They got enough guys to where they should be able to get the job done.
Because Phillips is out here. He got – that was like was it a felony burglary charge?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, it's not good. Not good. Not good, Devontae.
Yeah.
Yeah, no bueno there. Like, that's not one where I can see Florida State willing to really like go to bat for him.
Well, and the kind of the devil's advocate or the flip side of this is, you know, Tom Herman in his 2 years at Houston, he didn't have a 100-yard rusher at running back or 1,000-yard rusher at running back. He had
Greg Ward as about a 1,000-yard rusher.
Yeah, now Greg Ward had 1,000 yards 2 years ago.
Yeah,
he didn't last year because he was hurt some. But it's not like Tom Herman has to have a big play running back for his offenses to work. That said, like you mentioned, he had Greg Ward. Shane Buechele is while he's mobile, is not that.
Nah. Yeah.
So he needs somebody. Now, Kyle Porter, I mean, the
golf writer for CBS Sports?
Do we have a golf writer? Kyle Porter? So
Kyle Porter. By the way, if you like golf, you should listen to the First Cut podcast with Kyle Porter, hosted by Chip Patterson.
So the less famous Kyle Porter is a capable running back. But they got a couple freshmen who can play. But that is a room that doesn't have a ton of depth. It doesn't have a bunch of horsepower. That's a room that needs to prove something, and that's a room that loses a 2,000-yard rusher. Dope, you know, I mean, this is, you know, an All-American in Deonta Foreman. So I do think that's pretty big if Chris Warren can't stay healthy this year. And Kyle Porter, by the way, has been out with the shoulder too the last couple practices apparently. So they got to get that room healthy. Otherwise, they'll be playing some walk-ons during the season. But I guess I'm further proving the point that this is Chris Warren is who needs to be on the field between these two.
Sometimes when we try and do the exercise of like the irreplaceable players, it doesn't always come out. It ends up sometimes recycling essentially some of the best players in college football. But when you're looking, for example, in the SEC, Like, is there one spot for a team where you can think, like, for Kentucky, you had somebody who could come up, like in the offensive line, that they had the bodies there. And I'll go ahead and get you started. I don't think that Arkansas is ready to sustain another major setback to its offensive backfield and be considered a team that we can count on to move the ball. Whether it's Austin Allen or Devwa Whaley, like I kind of feel like when we were doing our order of finish picks, I was like, dang, man. It seems like the margin for Arkansas, particularly when it comes to attrition, is small.
Okay, you ready for an impromptu camp buzz?
Yeah.
Camp buzz. Chase Hayden at Arkansas, a true freshman, is – I don't disagree with what you're saying.
You're right.
But they actually really like this true freshman who's
– players that are making a buzz. Now we're there. Camp buzz. Campus.
All right, now it's back in my head, and I'll be singing in the hotel lobby again tonight. Yes. I agree with you, but I think they're better there than people realize, because Chase Hayden is going to come back and give them that third head and like a three-headed monster running back core. Brett Bielema even compared the group to his group when he had
at Wisconsin,
like Monty Ball.
And Melvin Gordon.
White,
yeah, James
was
White.
Melvin Gordon, the third one.
Yeah, that was early Melvin Gordon.
Yeah, yeah. So he actually, so he's speaking pretty highly of the guys he's still got. So I do think that'll be interesting to watch to see whether that's just rhetoric or legit.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I think. I mean, I guess Florida is always – or not Florida. Quarterback is always an easy place to point to. And I think two teams that have a chance to be really good this year but all of a sudden change dramatically if they lose a quarterback are Auburn and Mississippi State. Jarrett Stidham, I legitimately believe
the
Auburn
– The drop-off from Jarrett Stidham to Sean White is that bad.
It's huge to me. I legitimately believe Auburn is a
Auburn does not want to have another spot in the attrition edition, because if it's at quarterback,
yes.
SEC West hopes are dashed.
That's yes, and I think Mississippi State's in the same boat in terms of Nick Fitzgerald, as good as he is. They like the freshman that they got in Keaton Thompson, but he is not ready. He's just not ready. And so behind Keaton Thompson, they've got walk-ons, and so. Those are two areas where you can't lose your bodies at the quarterback position. I think there's some others like Florida. Yeah, flip a coin for we talked about them last show. Flip a coin for whatever the quarterback you're going to start. Kentucky, they got Drew Barker behind Steven Johnson. They're okay. Miles Brennan is probably fine behind Danny Etling. I think there's a lot of these situations where the quarterback play is you don't want to lose your quarterback, but you got someone behind them that can get it done. I think those two. If they lose their quarterback, that totally changes the picture.
All right. Award-winning closing segment, question of the day. Question of the day is, who runs this state? Got a couple of them. First, the Sunshine State, where we are currently located. Florida, loaded with FBS schools. Got all kinds of interesting coaches from the personality standpoint. But who... Florida State and Miami, shout out to Charlie Strong, Butch Davis, and Lane Kiffin, but they don't run the state. Can Miami run the state again?
Yeah, I think that's – here's the right. So the question isn't who runs the state, because it's obviously Florida State at this point.
For
right?
sure, yeah.
Is it possible that when we're having this conversation this time next year that Miami is you could argue Miami. Is it possible that we're ready that Miami is poised to take Florida State's perch? I think that's where you go with this.
Because they've got the local, they're getting the South Florida.
They're recruiting really well in South Florida.
Yeah, it's right now. Pipelines are back open again.
I think it's all about, to me, the answer to that question is about Nkosi Perry. If he is And I don't even think if, like, look, if Miami goes 8-4 and that'll be a disappointing year, I think they're hoping for 9-3 at the least, or if not 10-2. If they go like 8-4 this year and still are a second tier team relative to Florida State, if the second half of that 8-4 is a 6-0 Nkosi Perry run, now all of a sudden you got, I think things are interesting because they are going to be bringing back a ton of talent next year, and that defense is just, the linebackers in that group are so good,
and they're going to have another year.
Yes, all those guys are true sophomores. Yeah. And they got a couple true sophomores on the defensive line. They got some good young guys coming up that are already making noise in camp. Camp Buzz, Jonathan Garvin.
Woo!
So,
Jonathan Garvin making buzz.
So we got, look, there is a budding resurgence in that rivalry, I think, and unfortunately, I don't think Florida's in this. I've been hating on Florida a lot lately. I'm sorry, Gators. We'll see what happens. Maybe I'll change my tune if they beat Michigan.
Yeah, they're not going to beat Michigan. This is a tougher one. Who runs Texas?
This is I. When I first looked at the question, it was I didn't know where I would end up when I got to the answer, and I think I landed at TCU.
Woo!
What's yours?
I said Texas.
Why? I mean, I understand, like, okay, maybe we need to define what it means to run the state. Like, how can you possibly argue Texas over TCU? Is this a prediction of what this season looks
because,
like?
All right, so you're saying this, like, Texas has back-to-back 5-7 seasons. How can you rep the Longhorns?
Right.
Yeah.
And not only that, but TCU was
11-1, like,
two years ago. They were 11-2. 3 years ago, they were 12-1. They've their past two games combined against Texas has been like the final score is combined has been like 81-16 or something in their past two games combined against
but
Texas.
But doesn't it feel like they're still second rate?
Sounds like it does to you.
Yeah, I know.
But Texas, the University of Texas is always going to be the flagship program of that state. The burnt orange is always going to be the most recognizable flag.
Man, I've had so much Tom Herman Kool-Aid this offseason.
Look, I mean, they could be really good.
It's poisoned my thinking.
Your boy Tom Fornelli said that they're a dark horse playoff team, and I don't like hate that pick. I don't disagree with it. But I bet you right now, if you look on the Vegas, projected point spreads, I'll bet you if they have one out for a Texas TCU, I bet you TCU would be the favorite. They would have to be the favorite.
And neither of us gave anything for Texas A&M.
No. They had their chance, man. Their time came and went. The Johnny Manziel era is gone, and now this is – now, I've had discussions with people before. It'll be fascinating if Kevin Sumlin leaves or is fired. It'll be fascinating what sort of market that job has or demands.
I know.
Because it's still – I mean, that is still a great job with the SEC behind it.
With the SEC and, like, just oil tankers of money.
Right.
That they can drop off at your doorstep.
Phenomenal facilities already in place.
They just redid about damn everything.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, TCU is there for the taking to be the team in the state. And I tell you who really was trending to be the easy pick for this was Baylor.
Oh, I know.
They were totally on track, and they were recruiting well. They were getting it done on the field. They were
new stadium.
I mean, so but you just can't make that call right now. But no, I think TCU.
I had too much Texas sponsored Corona, limes in or horns up, limes down.
Can there be a Texas outsider that runs the state of Texas, Oklahoma? can we put Oklahoma runs the state,
or like LSU?
Yeah. I mean, Oklahoma's been running the Big 12, and they're still. I mean, they're back to recruiting really well again. So, but no, I feel pretty good about TCU, and I think that we talked about them in the point totals discussions, but I think TCU could surprise some people this year.
Sick. All right, California.
You go first.
Trojans are back.
They are back.
Yeah.
They are back.
And when you had me going down the freshmen that are on that team too, I was like, oh, and they're not they're not only back, they're not going anywhere.
No. I agree with you. And they got Sam Darnold, and I actually didn't go with them though.
What?
I maybe I'm overthinking this, but
San Diego State. Rocky Long and the Aztecs.
But to me, Stanford is – they are just as scary of a team. They are more consistent. USC still – they now have to play with these expectations that have been, you know, humped onto their back. Last year they had high expectations and they didn't handle it well. Then they started playing well when no one expected anything out of them.
Right.
When they were just out there just, hey, might as well play well. So I want to see – they kind of have to prove it to me a little bit. And Stanford is – I just think you always know what you're going to get with Stanford. And they actually recruit incredibly well right now. Like if you are an elite – academic kid that football is important to you, Stanford is they are Alabama, they are Ohio State, and so I think to me Stanford is, you got to sort of take the title from Stanford because they beat USC last year.
No, absolutely, they've had it. Now Stanford did have a habit there of even the USC teams that weren't that good, they got that early season game, USC would creep up there and steal it away behind like a Justin Davis or Trey Madden game, like one of those like five running backs that were all playing there. You know, throughout the Cody Kessler era, I guess it would be, you know, there for a little bit. But it's the battle for California is fun because no love for UCLA.
No, but there should be, like, UCLA should be in this conversation, they probably still have the talent to be involved in this conversation. They have players on that roster, but no, they're not. They're not deserving of being in that mix. And then who else we got? I mean, Cal's down.
Yeah.
You know, your mid majors. I think it's a two team race.
All right. Georgia Tech runs Georgia.
Georgia Tech, the Ramblin' Wreck. Yeah, that's another one that's weird to think it or say it, but Georgia Tech, man, someone give me the argument they don't run Georgia. Just because the University of Georgia has higher ranked recruiting classes, like, congratulations.
Yeah.
Georgia Tech still, they beat you two of the last 3 years.
I will say Georgia Tech is slipping. This is a big season for them, I think.
It is a big season for them, but...
But we're not that separated from them beating up on Mississippi State in the Orange Bowl.
And you know what's funny is, like, we have had a lot of Georgia Tech love on this show the last, like, three episodes. And I had no, like, coming into the season, I had no intention of hyping up Georgia Tech. But it's because no one looks at them. No one pays any attention to them because they assume they're running the option and it doesn't matter who's on offensive line, it doesn't matter who's a quarterback, who's a running back, they'll do what they do. But when you look at what they're due for this year, they're due for another 11-win season.
What'd you say? When's the last time that Paul Johnson's won less than six, huh? Come call me. Doesn't happen.
Yeah, he's done like twice in like 20 years or something, you know? And so... it's funny to think it, but, there was a great, I had a great debate on our Slack community at work, when we had our coaches, Power Five coaches ranking come out, and someone was sort of dogging the ranking saying, like, who in the world put, Paul Johnson ahead of Kirby Smart? And I was like, what? Think about what you just said.
Yeah.
And like, look at what's actually happened on the field and tell me there's any argument in the world that Kirby Smart's a better coach.
You don't get
than Paul 0.25
Johnson. Wins for Alabama.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like, we're talking about head coaches.
Now, he might be, and he might prove that someday, but you're guessing if you're saying that.
Yeah.
But people don't conceptualize Paul Johnson in that way. He's just the guy coaching Georgia Tech. And so I think it's fascinating to think about it in that terms of who runs the state, because I think it's hard to make an argument that he doesn't.
I'll tell you what, Georgia Tech's going to beat Tennessee.
We talked ourselves into it, haven't we? I knew we'd get there.
Yeah. He is Barton Simmons. Make sure you follow him on Twitter at Barton Simmons. You can follow me at Chip_Patterson. We will be back on Thursday. So make sure that you subscribe so that you can get the episodes first. Thank you.